Welcome to the ADHD Women's Wellbeing Podcast. I'm Kate Moore Youssef, and I'm a wellbeing and lifestyle coach, EFT practitioner, mum to four kids, and passionate about helping more women to understand and accept their amazing ADHD brains. After speaking to many women just like me, and probably you, I know there is a need for more health and lifestyle support for women newly diagnosed with ADHD. In these conversations, you'll learn from insightful guests, hear new findings, and discover powerful perspectives and lifestyle tools to enable you to live your most fulfilled, calm, and purposeful life wherever you are on your ADHD journey. Here's today's episode. And today, I'm absolutely delighted to introduce a fantastic guest. Her name is Dr. Gemma Newman. You may know her as the Plant Power Doctor on social media. She is also a best-selling author. She's a podcast host and she is a GP. And Gemma has worked in medicine for 2 decades and is also the senior partner at a family medical practice. And she has a very special interest in holistic health, plant-based nutrition and lifestyle medicine, something that I can't wait to talk about. And in her practice, she has come to understand that the mind, body, and soul are not separate. And that is only in addressing the root causes of stress and disconnection that we can truly heal from the inside out. Gemma is also a founding member and ambassador for Plant-Based Health Professionals UK and a member of the British Society of Lifestyle Medicine. And she's regularly invited to teach other doctors and the general public about the benefits of plant-based nutrition. Now, her best-selling book, The Plant Power Doctor, came out in 2021, which taught us how to future-proof our body and mind through the transformative effect of plant-powered eating. And now her second book, which has just been released, Get Well, Stay Well, The 6 Healing Health Habits Everyone Should Know, combines medicine, psychology, and nutrition. And it's her first book based on science-based research, providing simple, actionable tips and offering a unique wellness template to help transform your life. Wow, what a biog. Thank you, Dr. Gemma Newman, for being here. I can't wait to get stuck in and ask you lots of questions.
Thank you, Kate.
Can we go back to sort of basics, and maybe if anyone's listening right now and wants to know what even is functional medicine and how can that be blended with the traditional medical training that you've got?
Yes. So I trained as a functional medicine practitioner, but I work as an NHS GP. And for me, what was really useful about that training was that it allowed me to find more ways to zoom out and look at the whole picture. And I think one of the most useful things for patients in that setting is that their doctors have more time. They have more of an idea that their lifestyle, their emotional state can play a big role in their physical state. And also it's a lovely way of introducing the concept of timelines. As a doctor, we get a lot of training in looking at past medical history, social history, drug history, and a systems review. So we get kind of much more of an overview of the person medically, but we don't necessarily do a full and detailed timeline from, you know, even from pre-birth right up to the present moment and the struggles that people go through or the big life events or the, you know, the seemingly innocuous viral infections of childhood or, you know, or microbiome insults or whatever it might be. Emotionally also, that has perhaps played some role in their current physical and emotional state. So that for me was the most interesting part. I do have to add a caveat that you have to sometimes be careful as well with the concept of a functional medicine practitioner, because some of the things that we learn, especially perhaps maybe more relevant in the US model, there's an awful lot of potential tests that are done, some of which I would say not necessarily 100% evidence-based, certainly in terms of things like national screening programs, for example. They would never sort of pass that benchmark of being sort of relevant for large populations of people. And they can cost hundreds and hundreds and not necessarily give you the answers that you seek. So that's a small caveat to there. There's a lot of things that are also quite useful about it.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for that. It must be difficult as an NHS doctor to do what you do, because obviously with the time restrictions, money, all of that, and then you've got all this other knowledge. And, you know, hopefully as time progresses, you know, we'd be able to blend this knowledge. But there must be, maybe, is there a slight frustration from your side that when you have got I don't know how long it is now, 8 or 10 minutes with a patient, that you clearly want to go through all the emotional background and understand maybe the trauma they've been through and how much sleep they're getting and what they're eating and all these things that you potentially could help with, but know that you it's confined in such a small. I'm going to add to that layer of the amount of women who have been misdiagnosed or haven't had their diagnosis of ADHD until much later on in life, because simply we've not had the time to be able to do more investigation and more understanding about all the different presenting illnesses or all types of things that have gone on in life. Because it takes time, doesn't it? So do you find that hard as a GP?
Yes, I do. I went into general practice because I love people and I really care about people. And so, yes, I have 10 minutes. Sometimes I have 15, but mostly it's 10. And it's actually really hard to put all the puzzle pieces together. As a GP, we have an awful lot of training in the targeted history and targeted examination. And you also pick up an awful lot through 20 years clinical experience. So sometimes someone, you get a lot, this is going to sound perhaps a little bit more esoteric, but as soon as you lock eyes with someone and they sit down next to you, you have a really big indication of how they're feeling, what their social circumstances might be, what kind of energy they're carrying with them that day, and their sort of body type. There's all sorts of microscopic bits of information that you can pick up to help you sort of guide your consultation in the way that will hopefully make both of you feel as though you've actually reached a satisfactory outcome. However, yeah, I think ADHD takes time, it takes care. And I'm actually really grateful for the explosion in ADHD awareness, especially that's come with social media, because it has allowed a lot of self-compassion for people who've been struggling with certain patterns in their lives over the course of decades sometimes. And for me, compassion is the root of all healing. And so being able to find self-compassion by finally having that ADHD diagnosis, I think is for many people, especially the women that may be listening to this podcast, tremendously healing. So yes, I do get frustrated, but also I work with what I've got. And it's in fact the reason why I wrote my books, because I know I'm not going to be able to cover these topics in their entirety and do them justice in a consultation. But yeah, so the Plant Power Doctor book and Get Well, Stay Well, which has my absolute heart. I'm so happy to be able to offer that to people, because it means that people can treat it like a friend. They can come back to it. They can come ask questions and they can create their own wellness plan regardless of what struggles they were facing. So yeah, I get frustrated and I've sort of done my best to try and weave my way through in a way that seems to work.
Yeah. And I love that the title of the book is Get Well, Stay Well, because that is, the key, isn't it? We want it to be sustainable, manageable. We want to be able to feel empowered with our own health and to be able to make decisions based on knowledge and not what we have been told, through our family or through conditioning or through the society that we've been brought up in. It's being able to find these sort of, I know you've got the gloves framework, and maybe you could talk about that, but just to give people that knowledge that they can make decisions and choose. Could you tell us what the gloves framework is and what really inspired that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to make it really memorable for people. And I did that with an acronym, and yeah, it turned into a framework. So GLOVES stands for gratitude, love, outside, veggies, exercise, and sleep. Gratitude, love, outside, veggies, exercise, and sleep. And in each of those sections, I build up a picture of why. First up, I start with emotions, our emotional world, and the power of gratitude, the power of love in all its forms, and how that can help us to feel a lot more connected with others, connected with our highest self, connected with our higher purpose, connected with the moment that we are now living in, connected with grief, connected even with things like shame, how we can navigate all of the emotions of the human experience and bring us back to that place of gratitude. So there is an awful lot that's covered in that first two chapters when it comes to staying well or getting well. And then, of course, the more traditional aspects of lifestyle medicine also come into play. So nutrition has a role. I included some recipes, also exercise. I included some active relaxation as well, which I think is important for people with neurodivergence as well to consider. So Qigong is included in the book as well. And sleep, again, something that many ADHDers may struggle with, is something that I've included, not just why it's important and, you know, all of the things that can make people nervous about not getting enough sleep, but also real practical tips to help them get more of it, and also discuss insomnia in general. So it's really broad. The outside chapter also was really important to me because I wanted to really emphasize what we underemphasize in society, and that's our connection with nature, because we are nature. And it's something that we're really disconnected from, I think, in the modern world, and can drive huge elements of our mental and physical health. So yeah, so it's the framework that I've used, and people can make their own personal template based on all of the aspects of those six pieces of the framework. And I made it super simple because I know how important it is to really make things accessible and just being able to take that first step. So there's just literally a 3-point plan that people can make at the end of the book, which I'm actually most proud of, because I think sometimes it's so easy, especially, you know, with ADHD, some people may really struggle to get through the whole book because it's a chunky book, but it's hopefully easy to access. Yeah. But being able to put their own plan into place and come back to it, I think, is also really important. And, you know, the understanding as well that you won't necessarily always stick to the intention at the beginning of the plan, but there's a plan for not sticking to the intention too. So.
Yeah. And that comes back to self-compassion, doesn't it? It just comes back to, you know, meeting yourself where you are, you know, on that day with the energy that you are. I talk about hormonal cycles a lot, and really being able to sort of honor them and, you know, do what you can do with the resources you've got that day and what you've been challenged with externally. But, you know, I want to come back to, and there's so much I want to talk about, because basically what you do underpins why I started this podcast over 2 years ago, because I was trained as a health coach. And then I trained as a EFT practitioner. So I was blending lots of sort of the holistic, sort of the more the functional medicine. So I wasn't trained in functional medicine, but a lot of what I sort of was trained in really kind of focused on that. And then I understood that my anxiety, my emotional well-being, wherever I was emotionally, impacted me physically, and, you know, the inflammation in my body. So I've always sort of had to deal with IBS. I've dealt with all sorts of things that I could just feel, like back pain. And I knew it was always connected to where I was emotionally, and being able to release those emotions, which I've used with tapping, be able to blend it all together in the framework that you've got. You know, we talk about all the time going outside in nature, movement, honoring our emotions. And I think with neurodivergent people, the way I've always looked at it is that we are more sensitive to the external environment and what we're being, you know, what's being thrown at us. And because of what's going on in the world at the moment with social media, everything's so fast paced. There's so much angst going on. We're being thrown everything from every angle. We have to protect our energy even more. We have to be able to recognize that we have to choose to step away from the things that potentially could deplete and drain us. And so we've been given a framework by you in this book, which is fantastic, to be able to say, right, actually, my sleep this week hasn't been great, and I'm noticing that I'm not as resilient. Even today, this morning, I've got a son who's 18, and he's going through his A-levels, just about to start his A-levels, and he's got ADHD. And I can hear him upstairs in his bedroom at like midnight pottering around, and he's got to be up out of school, you know, really 7:30, 8 o'clock, he's got to be up. I know he's not getting enough sleep. And the first thing for him that goes when he's not sleeping, he gets a cold, he gets a sore throat. And he said to me this morning, I'm ill again. And I said, well, you're not sleeping enough. He goes, well, I'm getting 7 hours. I said, I promise you, it's not enough. But because I'm his mum, you know, he doesn't listen to me. But we have to prioritize these things to help us thrive, because I think being neurodivergent, we can get knocked off kilt very easily. So food, sleep, movement outside, fresh air, nature, an acknowledgement of our emotions, it's very powerful what you're doing. And I wonder, you know, how much of this do do you use in your own life? Is this kind of like driven you? I mean, where did this begin, I guess? Because there's always a personal reason why we become interested in this type of thing. Were you interested in this when you went to medical school, or was it something that kind of opened your eyes a bit further down the journey?
Kate, I love your questions and I love
lots of them. Your,
yeah, there are so many in there that I really feel as though, no, it's great because it shows how passionate you are. And it also shows, I think many of the things we're passionate about do come from, you know, they arise from struggle and they arise from pain and painful experiences. And I think the beauty for your son is that, you know, you're perhaps more aware of the struggles that he might be facing than perhaps even he is at this moment in time. And so although it's natural for our children not to want to listen to their parents, he will be watching you, much as he, you know, is pulling away and doing his own thing, as teenagers do. They always know and come back to observing what their parents do, more so than what they say. So even if you are aiming to look after yourself in the best way you can and sort of modeling that, he will admire it and he'll appreciate it in his subconscious, even if he sort of rejects it externally.
I hope so. But thank you for saying that. I do hope that's the long-term plan for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. And I'm sure that he will. So getting back to my motivation, my why, I have wanted to be a doctor almost all my life. I have a deep sense of connection with a feeling that, I mean, I suppose, although this isn't something that I write about in all the references of my book, it's very much science and evidence-based. My heart is really in the concept of a deep spiritual connection with others, not just humans, animals, the planet, the cosmos. You know, I felt this strong kind of connection to all that is, and I really wanted to be able to use my lifetime to help others feel the same way. And so I chose medicine because I guess it's really what I saw from my grandmother. My grandmother on my father's side trained as a doctor at a time at which it would have been very challenging for her to do so. She qualified during the Second World War and she went out to India and she worked in India during the war. And she had lots of experiences as a doctor there helping patients. And I felt inspired by her, but also just by my ability to keep quite calm under pressure. My mum is very impulsive at times. And, you know, she and I were a bit like chalk and cheese. And I loved to be able to help provide a little bit of stability in a way for her. And also, you know, my father had terrible mental health issues. He really struggled during his lifetime. He had stints in and out of hospital, electroconvulsive therapy, strong medications. And I also began to realize through my relationship with him that no matter how much you really want to be the healer for somebody in your life, you can't do that for them. But I still wanted to go into medicine because I understood that, you know, when I took my ego out of it, when I took my desire to want to be the one to heal out of it, I realized that in that effort really to connect with others and to bring out a spark in them or even just plant a seed of an idea, years down the line, it might make a difference to their life that you can never properly fully appreciate. And sometimes those deeper lessons come in very unexpected ways. And so I guess that's the long way of saying I've always had a heart for it, but it's kind of melded over the years based on the things that I experienced in this life. So yes, I originally trained in medicine. I also did extra training in psychology because I've always been very interested in people. So I learned cognitive behavioral therapy, compassion-focused therapy, solution-focused approaches. And nutrition came about as well through experience. I used to struggle a lot with energy levels and my weight, which still fluctuates from time to time. And I realized over the years through my husband, actually, that focusing more on plant-based nutrition was incredibly helpful. It reduced my cholesterol. It stopped me from getting body aches when I exercised. And yeah, it's lovely to also see the transformations in my patients. And yeah, I wanted to provide research. I wanted to help myself and others understand how it could be so healing because it's one of those things, I think, that unless you actually research it properly, it's very easy to fall into various nutrition traps, I think, on social media. based around feelings more than facts. And so that became a really important mission for me as well. But it wasn't all of me. So although people know me as the plant power doctor online, my book Get Well, Stay Well integrates a lot more of the other things that I do day to day and that I feel and that I've researched separately from nutrition as well.
Yeah. Oh, that is, I mean, it's amazing to hear sort of the background. And when you mentioned your grandma, I had the most amazing guest, podcast guest, Dr. Gladys McClary. I don't know if you've come across her. And she's written an amazing book. She's 102 and she's a doctor in America. And she set up the Holistic American Medical Association. And she grew up in India as well. And she learned all the holistic side from people, you know, gurus in India. And she took what she knew and she traveled all around the world. And I interviewed her last year. It was absolutely fascinating, incredible honor to be able to talk to a 102-year-old doctor who only stopped practicing or advising patients, I think, when she was 95. And she's written an amazing book. And so I'd highly recommend the book. And I can't remember the name of the book, but it's fantastic. She was all over the, you know, loads of different podcasts and everything. So I'd highly recommend looking into her because you might align with a lot of her values.
She sounds like an incredible woman. You know, it's interesting because, as I said, my grandmother spent a lot of time in India.
Yeah.
My grandfather also. And I was in India for quite some time during my childhood.
Oh, wow.
In southern India.
So that just shows, doesn't it? So on the podcast, you have probably heard me talking about our nervous system quite a lot. And I work with our nervous system in all my one-to-one sessions, but also all my group coaching as well. So I'm really happy to let you know that I have a 4-part workshop series called Regulating Your ADHD Nervous System. And it's all through the polyvagal lens. I recorded this a few months ago and it was a really successful coaching group. So I wanted to be able to make this available to you all as a 4-session series. You will get these once a week for 4 weeks, so it doesn't feel overwhelming and you're able to really sort of let the information integrate. So if you often feel out of control, you're easily triggered by daily stress, or perhaps you've noticed that your nervous system is always in this sort of constant state of fight or flight, this sympathetic mode, or perhaps you're just wondering how your ADHD impacts your nervous system and your daily life and would like to experience more inner calm, this is probably for you. So you'll have more clarity on what those triggers are of the feelings of anxiety and worry and the hypervigilance that impacts your mental and physical health. And you'll also gain effective daily practices designed to help you understand and regulate your own nervous system with informed and science-backed information. If this sounds like what you're looking for, head to my website. It's all there on the homepage. And really just have a read through and see if it's something that you need. So it's 1 month of dedicating to really understanding your own nervous system and what it is that you need more of to help you feel more regulated, calm, connected, and empowered. Head to my website, adhdwomenswellbeing.co.uk. Let's get back to the episode. And I wonder, you know, as a doctor yourself, like what would you say to women who are suspecting that they've probably had ADHD and or autism for most of their lives, and they want to go and speak, because I get these messages all the time, and they say, I'm very curious, I think, or my child's just been diagnosed, and I'm seeing a lot of the same traits in my child. And I often have to say to them, I think you need to make an appointment with your GP, because that's really where it begins. But I'm also very aware that a lot of GPs who aren't so well-versed in all of this, they can be dismissed. And it kind of, and the trauma, you know, they've had so much trauma through their life and that sets them back even more. Is there any advice that you could give the listeners if they are wanting to go to their GP with potential ADHD diagnosis?
Yeah, I think my main piece of advice is to be gentle with yourself. You've probably experienced all sorts of things in your life that you're only just starting to piece together. And it can feel like quite a vulnerable time. And so with anything like this, getting a diagnosis can be helpful because it gives you a pathway. Again, as I mentioned earlier, a pathway towards self-compassion. Your GP may not be an expert in ADHD or the diagnosis of autism, but they will be able to refer you to people who are. That being said, I don't know what it's like in your region, but where I work, there are horrendous, absolutely shocking waiting lists. And so, again, it's another hurdle and it's another piece of the puzzle that is going to take longer for you to put together unless you have the emotional and financial bandwidth to seek private diagnosis. And, you know, many of my patients have done that. Many are still waiting for NHS diagnosis. Many have decided to go and see a specialist privately. What I would say is that it's highly unlikely that if you've found information online or you've had a journey with perhaps one of your own children and you started to piece all these patterns together, it's highly unlikely that you would be wrong. It's very rare for somebody to decide, I'm going to diagnose myself with ADHD or autism and not be correct. So I think, again, it's about being kind to yourself and understanding that, you know, there are people out there who may become quite cynical, say, oh, well, everyone's getting a diagnosis these days and everybody's a little bit on the spectrum. And, you know, try not to take it personally when people say things like that. Again, just accept that, you know, there's still a lot to be learned and there's a lot of ignorance around it, but to be compassionate with where you are on that journey that you're facing and know that, you know, being able to get support perhaps from people around you is helpful as well. And, you know, as you've rightly said, Kate, books like mine, they can provide a kind of a framework for you to just start to provide a little bit of love for yourself when you're going through these hard times and these hard realizations. Because when you look after your mind and body, it makes that sensitive nature a little bit more resilient to the pressures of life. So regardless of whether you can get your diagnosis or when you can get your diagnosis, these things are really useful regardless, because they can give you that time and space and accountability and honesty that you're going to need when you sort of start embarking on these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do try and tell people that, yes, it can be very important to get that diagnosis if you are seeking medication. But a lot of people, you know, aren't interested in that medication route. It may really, really help and it may not. And so I always say, from a lifestyle perspective, if you are waiting for the NHS and you are on that very long waiting list, start empowering yourself, educating yourself, making those small changes, looking at where maybe your ADHD has shown up. And, you know, I said at the beginning, we often have a lifetime of migraines, IBS. There's been some form of inflammation in the body, whether or not that's because there's been so much stress in our body because we've not understood ourselves or we've not been able to cope with life that's been presented to us. We've been told it has to be done in one way. We have to work these hours. We have to be educated like this. We have to keep our home. And very often it's the women, because from a societal perspective, we've been told that this is the way we should be doing things. And as time is evolving, we're recognizing that we can break outside of these conformities, these boxes. And very often when the ADHD diagnosis comes, it gives a lot of women this new chapter, this new offering, an opportunity to see life differently and to begin new chapters. And maybe it's a career change. Maybe it's recognizing that where they're living, their boundaries, who you know, the people pleasing, the overgiving, all these different aspects, you know, all the compounding factors that isn't just what we put in our body, which I think is vital, but it's the emotions that we're absorbing and what we're absorbing from around us, that if we can release them, it feels lighter. And I think it impacts our body, you know, whether it's from a chronic pain perspective or chronic fatigue, we hear about this, fibromyalgia. I think you would agree that the mind has a huge impact on what's going on in our body, and being able to address that emotionally. And I love that you've done all the psychology and the compassion-focused therapy. Tell me a little bit about, I mean, we've both got an interest in tapping. Do you bring that into your GP practice? Do you teach people that? Is that something that you do for yourself? And what do you think about that? Because I know that some people think it's still a bit woo-woo, but I personally think it's incredibly helpful.
No, you're right. I think it can be extremely helpful. And I've actually included it in the book, which I forgot to mention. There's a chapter here where I've included emotional freedom technique tapping. I do include it in my practice from time to time, and I can direct people to it if they're interested in the book as well. And having said that, it's always nice to have an official practitioner to take the time to really go through it with you and help you come up with the most useful scripts for you. So I suppose just to give people a background, it's a lovely combination of physical therapy and psychological scripts combined. So the tapping is essentially a way to activate your parasympathetic nervous system and your psychology by just very simply tapping on a few different body parts, which are related to the meridians of the body, interestingly. So that's bringing in some yang sheng, some Chinese wellness medicine, if you like, but also more traditional Western style psychology scripts that will help you to perhaps reframe what you're currently experiencing. So yeah, it was actually invented in the 1990s, and it can just be incredibly helpful for people if they're open to it. I do. It's great.
I have lots of tapping videos on my website and on my Vimeo.
Oh, good.
So I always direct people to it. But I know that obviously you being a doctor, you like science-backed evidence as well to blend it. And there's an amazing woman in Australia called Dr. Peter Stapleton. And she's got a website, I think it's called Evidence-Backed EFT, Science-Backed EFT. And she's done lots of clinical trials to be able to show that when we do some tapping, we're able to help ourselves, whether it's with regards to maybe going through cancer treatment, like helping with the symptoms of chemotherapy. It can be pain, chronic pain, migraines. She's done on trauma. I mean, so many different things. And I think what she has brought to the world, which is vital, is to show that actually it really can work. And we, you know, she's done these trials. So I like to be able to bring what she does into the equation so people don't think it's just sort of strange tapping and then, you know, they're not quite understanding it. But I've always, from the minute I got diagnosed with ADHD, I'd already trained in tapping and I couldn't work out why I found it so powerful because I knew my nervous system was always heightened. It was always on this sort of sympathetic mode, I would call it. I never felt like I was in parasympathetic. And I couldn't work out why the tapping helped so efficient and effective. And I really do believe that tapping can be incredibly helpful for people with ADHD. And I've used it, you know, myself, a lot of my clients now, my children. And so anyone who is in that kind of heightened state with anxiety, or they can feel, you know, the cortisol, the stress response rising. And I always say, just try a little bit of tapping just to kind of calm things down. And it can be great with things like self-doubt, confidence, confusion, overthinking, all the things that potentially in our ADHD brains were sort of all over the place. It just kind of settles things down. So I love that you, being a doctor, can really kind of advocate for it as well. It makes me very happy.
Oh, thank you, Kate. I'm glad. And it's wonderful to hear how much it's helped you. That's one of the things that I wanted for the book. It's interesting you mentioned about, you know, rates of things like fibromyalgia, chronic pain. There are so many chronic illnesses that are on the rise, especially in younger women than ever before. And again, I think very often it's that disconnect between our emotional world and our physical world. And I think the society that we're living in, there are so many pressures on us as well, external pressures, ways that we have to conform, which affect the way that we feel. And pressures, I think, just generally, the world isn't very kind to people who are neurodiverse, and the world is still not very accepting of difference, much as we like to think that we are. And so I just think it's so important for us to feel understood and to feel as though we're accepted for who we are. And yes, of course, there are even more financial pressures than ever before, which I think plays more of a part in it than people who are into wellness online like to admit. You know, you can, we can sort of do forgiveness letters and tapping and eat as healthy a food as we can. But if we can't actually even afford to buy food, and we can't afford to make rent, and we can't afford to live in a way that we want to live, that in itself is a huge stressor. And that's something that is really hard, because it's not something that a book or a program can take away. But at the same time, it's why I wanted to share these messages, because everything in the book is free. We don't have to spend out on expensive biohacking, wellness tools. Yeah. It's literally all free, apart from your groceries, which, you know, you're always going to have to buy.
Yeah. And I think that's really important, isn't it? It takes that pressure. It takes that pressure and the overwhelm away, that we don't have to do it all. I know you've got this amazing, this gloves framework, but we can pick and choose. And we can, you know, one day, the only energy we might have is just to sort of have some gratitude. Or tonight, I'm just going to go to bed early and I'm going to turn my social media off. I think what you say is so right. The pressures that are coming in at us from every single angle, it's almost a bit of a paradox, because we've got so much information that we can consume, so much great information, so much knowledge, you know, what you're doing and, you know, Instagram, what we can find on there, and the fact that we've got this new awareness of neurodivergence. But then on the flip side, there's just so much noise. And I hope that as we, you know, the generations ahead of us, they can be more discerning, I hope. I think I'm speaking that we're the similar age, maybe. I'm probably older than you, but it's trying to make a choice now of what we want to absorb and what we're actively saying, no, that's not good for us anymore. I think I kind of understand it all, and I see myself scrolling. I find myself scrolling, and I'm half an hour later, and I think, what have I just done that for? And I can feel my nervous system, my body, my shoulders are tense, and palpitations. And all that I've done is go through social media. In my head, there's been comparisons, there's been pressure, there's been, oh my God, I need to be doing this, my social media is not big enough, da 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 da. And I have to every single day make that choice of like, no. So can you imagine if we're feeling this, what's a 15-year-old girl feeling? And no wonder we're seeing all this chronic inflammation and this stress and this, you know, and so, yeah, I think maybe if we are parents, or we are helping children or looking after people, or all of that, we just have to do what we can to maybe model. And like what you said about my son, I hope that he is watching me from, you know, from the sidelines, and hoping that, you know, one day he might be able to make those choices himself. He is doing really well, actually. He does make good choices, just going to bed late and probably doing other things I don't know about. But I guess that's life, isn't it? You can't control everybody and everything. And so no. I just want to thank you for doing what you're doing, because I think it's really, really powerful, because I don't want to say it in a negative way, but you're sort of hiding under the guise of a GP, an NHSD GP, but you're doing so much more. So you're bringing people in that first kind of that port of call of like, yeah, let's do 10 minutes. But actually you're then able to spread more wisdom and guidance and all the amazing knowledge that you've got. So I think it's really powerful.
Oh, thank you, Kate. And I think also one of the things I really love about having my own practice is that although I'm working within a very limited paradigm, I do get to see people again, and I do get to observe their journeys and help hopefully tilt things in a more positive direction over time. So it's a lovely position to be in. And it allows me to help people that don't have the funds to seek psychotherapy, or often to seek, you know, private care, which provides a lot more meaning for me, actually. So I do really appreciate, I feel so grateful for being able to do that. And yeah, I do enjoy it very much. And I appreciate all the lovely, kind comments that you've made. I think it's great to be able to talk on podcasts like this to spread that message of self-compassion, because it's all very well saying be kind, you know, there's a certain amount of sound bites that almost sort of flow off us like water off a duck's back. But actually to truly integrate those messages, being compassionate to yourself and to other people, takes a lot of work sometimes. Mm. And it takes repetition.
Yeah.
It's not just a kind of one and done.
Absolutely. Every day you get up and it's, let's start this show again. But it gets, yeah. It does get easier. It comes, I think what you said then is key, is the repetition. But one day, a few months down the line, a few years down the line, that voice of self-kindness becomes more of the voice that we hear, as opposed to the voice of the inner critic, which may have just been leading the show for years and years without us even being aware of it.
Yeah, exactly. And it comes with that greater awareness, yeah. Doesn't it? I mean, you know, the negative self-critic, they've been in charge of the show for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, however many years. So you've got to give yourself that little bit of self-compassion when you find your thoughts slipping back into criticism. self-criticism and criticism of others, if we're honest, because I think it's often, it's hard to not sort of succumb to a voice of criticism, not only for ourselves, but sometimes also for other people. And so when we can build that self-compassion into our memory scripts and our neurons can fire off in different directions, it's great because, yeah, we need that practice. And when we slip back into old patterns, it's natural. Yeah. Because those neurons have been firing for 40, 50 years.
Absolutely. And they can be changed. You know, we talk about neuroplasticity. It's not, there's an older mentality of this is who I am, this is who I'm always going to be, and things aren't going to change. You know, very much kind of the maybe our grandparents' generation of just being sort of stuck. But it's been validated by science that we can change the way our brain thinks and operates, and it's possible. And so to anyone that thinks, how am I ever going to get there? I promise you, every single day, a little tiny choice, a little tiny shift, a tweak in a habit, it does, it fires those neurons and makes them sort of, you know, change and become more flexible and elasticated, whatever the words, I'm not a scientist, but it's definitely possible. And I think through maybe reading your book, just having that there on the side and just being able to open it and make a little choice every day is really, really powerful. So I just want to thank you. I'm excited to see, hopefully, Western medicine being fused more with this kind of functional, holistic, integrative approach, because I think it's very much needed.
I hope so too. And, you know, to give hope to that, there are so many doctors out there that I'm connecting with who've reached out to me, who are interested, who are excited, because it's hard for doctors too. You know, many of them will train with the idea that they want to help people, but cynicism and exhaustion and burnout often get in the way. And so being able to provide a path that will allow people to be able to empower themselves a bit more, I mean, that's exciting. And there's a lot of doctors who are definitely showing an interest. So yes, I think that, yeah, it's positive. It's moving in the right direction.
Oh, well, Gemma, where can people find you if they're interested to hear more about your work?
Yeah, so I've got a website, gemmanewman.com, which is quite useful because if you sign up for the newsletter, you'll get up-to-date information about speaking events or retreats that I'm doing as well. I run a personal development and empowerment retreat with my husband. We provide life transformation experiences and I practice Jikiden Reiki as well during those retreats with people, which is really nice. So if you sign up for my newsletter, you will get information about where and when the next ones will be. On Instagram, I'm Plant Power Doctor. And on Twitter, I'm Plant Power Doc, I think. And I'm on TikTok as Plant Power Doctor as well.
Well done.
So if you're a TikToker, yeah, absolutely. I try my best. Wow. And I recently joined LinkedIn.
Amazing. So. You've got some form of expansive time that's going on in your world. I don't know how you fit it all in, but you're doing good work, really, really great work. So I'm going to put all the links in the show notes so people can find you. And of course, the book, it's out now. So thank you so, so much for your time today, Gemma.
It's been an absolute honour. Thank you, Kate. And you're amazing doing what you do. It's going to be so helpful for so many women.
I really hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you did and it resonated with you, I would absolutely love it if you could share on your platforms or maybe leave a review and a rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please do check out my website, adhdwomenswellbeing.co.uk, for lots of free resources and paid for workshops. I'm uploading new things all the time and I would absolutely love to see you there. Take care and see you for the next episode.